Welcome to OK Sis Podcast.
Hi, sisters. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Scout.
And we are sisters IRL.
I'm the older one.
Yes, Scout. We know.
We're cultural observers.
And of curious minds.
Get ready for sisterly banter while we chat about fixations, learnings, and personal growth.
We promise it'll be a good time.
As long as you don't get too loud, Mads.
Welcome to the sisterhood!
Hello and welcome back to OK Sis. My name is Mads.
And I'm Scout, the older sister. We are sisters, and you're listening to OK Sis Podcast.
That is the truth. That is a fact.
Yeah, well, we're in the business of doing a lot of things, but providing the facts is one of them.
Providing the facts. It's so true. How are you this fine day, Scoutula?
You know, today I'm having a good day. I am learning the tough lesson yet again. I learn this lesson over and over and over again because I don't actually learn it or implement it into my soul, is that I am a people pleaser. And when people ask me to do things, I say yes. And so I have gotten to the place maybe 200 times where I am so overwhelmed by my social obligations. So I called Dad and said that I wasn't going to Shabbat today.
That's a big step.
Yeah, you have a different relationship with our family where I feel as if I feel guilty when I don't show up to something. You're very much like, yeah, I'm not doing that, which is why one time I had to literally drive 3 hours to go to like Uncle fucking Al's birthday because you refused to not show up and one of us had to.
Who's Uncle Al?
That's not his actual name. I don't know his name. So I'm just trying to... I'll tell you after. I'm just trying to implement some boundaries and feel okay with saying, hey, I'm sorry, I can't go to dinner. Mm-hmm. And not just this week, for the motherfucking foreseeable future with you. Like, I haven't seen you in 4 years. No reason for us to go to dinner.
Can confirm this is a great practice for you. I am currently in the unblocking boundaries with Lacey Phillips. So I am right. What you are doing is the verbal boundary, the verbal communication. And we love that for you, Scout. We love boundaries.
Yeah. I literally got off the phone with Dad and I said, I'm really sorry. Like, explained to him where I'm at and how I just right now my business with Scout's agency is just super ramping up. I am dabbling into the psychosis symptoms of my bipolar disorder. And I just had to say, I'm going to be a little busy lately doing me. But I felt fucking terrible saying that. But that's not the point. The point is that I did it.
Yes. The point is you are signaling to yourself and to the universe that this is a boundary that you are placing energetically into the world.
Well, you know, if that sentence was typed, one would not know if Scout said it, or one would think Scout said it, but Scout didn't say it. Maddie said it.
That was me. That was all from my brain.
Signaling the universe about your energetic boundaries? Who are you?
I know. Lacey Phillips has been injected into my veins. It's like, I just can't get her out of my head.
Oh, thank God. Thank God for that. How are you feeling, Mads?
Oh, you know, I mean, it's been a day. We're recording this on a Friday afternoon, which hashtag never again and hashtag boundaries.
I set the boundary with you. I said I am no longer available for Friday recordings.
I mean, I am. That's a boundary I'm setting for myself right now as well, because I thought I could do this. And I was like, I was so energetic in the beginning of the day. I also had back to back meetings. I kid you not, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., like not even 1 minute in between. So that is just a recipe for disaster when it comes to creating content. So I'm going to keep it together. I had Ben June fetch me a cold brew that I'm drinking at 4:15 on a Friday. So let's see what happens tonight. But we're going to do this. We're going to do this because this is an episode that I feel very strongly about and that needs to be told and needs to be in the world. I don't know. It needs to be get out of me. Yeah. Is what I'm trying to say.
I was going to say, this is an episode, sisters, that Mads is actually a little nervous to share and talk about. And so I'm really excited because I feel like when you get to that point where you've lived through something and you've worked through something, yet you're really afraid to share it, that in that fear comes so much healing, not only for you, but for the person listening and consuming the narrative that you're telling. So I'm super excited for this episode. But first, shall we do some current fixations?
Yes, we shall.
Okay, so my current fixation is an album. It is probably the best album. So I've always said that the Velvet Underground album is my favorite by, the Velvet Underground and Nico, duh.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that the name of the band?
I'm trying to think of what the name of that album is. Whatever, that's has always been my favorite album, but this one has taken its place. It's Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66. This album is so fucking good. It's bossa nova-y. It's got this flavor. It's in English, which is a little interesting.
You're a bossa nova stan.
I'm a bossa nova stan, but a very specific type of bossa nova stan. So I don't like the elevator music stuff. I like more of like Cubanish music, more Latina music, kind of even crossing the border to the Gypsy Kings kind of stuff. So I'm sorry if I'm saying his name wrong. I'm really trying to not say Sergio because that's incorrect.
Sergio.
So Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66 is, I can't stop listening to it. Out of my head, I played that 4 times in a row yesterday while I was cooking my meal, you know. Out of my head onto you. Out of my head onto you. Out of
Get
my
it,
head. Day and night. Night and day.
Yeah.
And
hey. I have no idea what you're saying.
You don't know that song?
No, I don't know what you're saying.
Wait, how do I know it and you don't? Because I'm assuming that I was introduced to it in our childhood.
No, we have never.
Wait, you don't know this band? You don't know this album?
I don't know what you're. I am clueless.
Whoa!
I thought you just found it.
No, I've known them for so long. I don't remember the origin of where I was introduced to this album, and so I just assumed that Dad listened to it.
No.
Oh, your life is about to change. Oh God, I know what you're doing tonight. You're playing the whole fucking album.
Okay. Homework.
Wow. This is a good day. This is a good day for you.
This is a good day for me.
You know, the look of love. No?
No, I don't. None of this is ringing any bells.
Oh, wow. Okay. My mind's a little blown. Maybe I need to go into my psyche and figure out where I found these songs because, you know, my memory is clearly not serving me correctly. So what's your current fixation, Mads?
My current fixation is smoothies. And I never knew that the smoothie life was the life for me. I didn't think this was in my, brand pillars to be a smoothie gal. But that is what I have been introduced to. So Ben's parents gave us their old blender. We were, in the market for a blender. So this is just serendipitously came into our life. And I have been making these just like simple smoothies, which is really bad to admit, but I never used to do like post-workout smoothies or even eat. You're supposed to eat like 30 minutes right after working out to reap some of the benefits. But now I can just make a quick smoothie. I got the Saqqara protein powder, the plant-based protein powder. I put banana, almond milk, ice, handful of spinach. And voila, you got yourself a protein-packed smoothie, and it tastes delicious.
Okay, so I have so many thoughts about the smoothie life.
Yeah.
I was on the smoothie life for about 8 months to a year, and that's what I drank for breakfast. That was my breakfast every single morning. And I put the Vital Proteins protein powder in. I loved it.
This feels like it's triggering for you.
It is a triggering thing for me, and I'll tell you why. Because for some reason, and I can't explain to you why because I didn't actually speak to a nutritionist about this, the smoothie made me crash so significantly in the afternoon to the point where you can ask Naomi, who was working with me at the time, I would have to take a nap no matter where I was. It got such intense lethargy, to the point where I was afraid.
Is it lethargy?
I don't know. I was afraid to make plans where I wasn't able to close my eyes somewhere. Like, I could not physically get through the day to the point to the point that my psychiatrist put me on medication because I was so fucked up by this. And I was having diarrhea three times a day.
Honestly, jealous.
And then I one
What's
day,
that like
one
to
day,
poop?
I did not. Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother story. One day I didn't drink the smoothie and I had eggs instead and I didn't crash at all and I didn't have diarrhea. And so after some trial and error, I realized that I think it's because it's either was the protein powder that I was using or it's the fact that I put a lot of berries and raspberries and blueberries, like having that much sugar at that time of the day fucked me over for the rest of the day. So I don't subscribe to the smoothie game anymore.
Got it. Mine is minimal fruit. So we got half the banana. That's it. That's all it is. Just for a little creaminess. But yeah, I feel you. And you know what? Like, diarrhea scout is not the scout we need, you know?
Not just diarrhea scout. Diarrhea and passed out scout. You know, like, not at the same time, but within the same day.
Oh, wow. What if you passed out in your diarrhea? Oi. Okay, we're getting into tricky territory here.
Okay, let's get into the episode, Mads, shall we? Real quick, sisters, we are so excited to chat with you today about what I'm considering my new signature look, Warby Parker.
Every time I see those tortoise shell frames, I truly do think of you, Scout.
Oh yeah, the Kimball ones. I got those years and years ago, and I've been wearing them religiously ever since. But I had to hop on Warby Parker's home try-on kit, and now when I want a softer, more feminine look, I turn to my rose crystal Percy frames.
Wait, Scout, before you get too much into that, let's back up. What is Warby Parker, sisters? Warby Parker is committed to providing exceptional vision care online and in stores, offering eyeglasses, sunglasses, eye exams, and contact lenses. Glasses start at $95, including prescription lenses. Sunglasses, progressives, and blue light lenses are also available.
They have my favorite style of glasses, but what I love so much about Warby Parker is their home try-on kit. I took their quiz, selected my 5 favorite frames that I wanted to try on. They showed up at my door days later, and I got to try them on in the comfort of my own home. After I FaceTime Mads 8 million times, who helped me pick the Percy's as the winner, I easily returned to the frames, ordered the Percy's with my prescription, and received my very own pair straight to my doorstep.
It felt like having a personal shopper come straight to my apartment. I also ordered the Percy, but in striped sassafras with blue light after getting my home try-on kit, which you probably have seen me rocking on the Instagram. They had my prescription on file from previous glasses, so super easy to order right away.
Mads, always, always copying me. As if affordable, stylish frames that you can try on at home wasn't enough, for every pair of glasses sold, Warby Parker distributes a pair of glasses to someone in need.
Try Warby Parker's free home try-on program. Order 5 pairs of glasses to try on at home for free for 5 days. There's no obligation to buy. It ships free and includes a prepaid return shipping label. So try 5 pairs of glasses at home for free at warbyparker.com/OKSIS. That's warbyparker.com/OKAYSIS.
Or you can go to the link in our show notes and DM us when you pick your winning glasses. Okay, sisters, back to the episode.
My heart is beating, but this needs to come out of my subconscious. So we're going to bring it out.
Let's first talk about we were guests on My Point of View podcast, which has not been released yet, but it's going to. So go check out that podcast. It's amazing. And we started talking about our college experiences, and we realized that we have, one, very, very different experiences, and two, have a lot of emotional feelings about the college life experience. And we realized that we hadn't actually done a really big deep dive on the podcast. So that's where the inspiration for this episode came.
Right. So we're going to really define college experiences, but specifically the college admission process, and then overall views on the current educational system. It will be fun, I promise. I just want to preface that. Okay. I feel like we're going to school, but it's not. Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't fuck with school. So we're not going to school.
We're not going to school. Okay. So first, though, I do want to read this excerpt from Joan Didion's new essay collection called Let Me Tell You What I Mean. Our producer, Helen, while we were talking through this solo episode, she brought up this amazing essay. We are Joan Didion stands over here, so it just felt pertinent to read a little excerpt. So it's in the essay On Being Unchosen by the College of One's Choice. All right, here we go. Getting into college has become an ugly business, malignant in its consumption and diversion of time and energy and true interests, and not its least deleterious aspect is how the children themselves accept it. They talk casually and unattractively of their first, second, and third choices, of how their first choice application does not actually reflect their first choice. They are calculating about the expectation of rejections, about their backup possibilities, about getting the right sport, and the right extracurricular activities to balance the application, about juggling confirmations when their third choice accepts them before their first choice answers, and of course, none of it matters very much at all. None of these early successes, early failures. I wonder if we had better not find some way to let our children know this, some way to extricate our expectations from theirs, some way to let them work through their own rejections and sullen rebellions and interludes with golf pros, unassisted by anxious prompting from the wings. Finding one's role at 17 is problem enough without being handed somebody else's script. Just let that sink in. So I just don't think a lot of people talk about this pivotal moment in their lives, getting rejected specifically from dream colleges and the constant cycle of rejection and pressure that education places on us. And you might be 10 years removed from this experience like I am, but it still haunts me to today. And you know, everyone knows that, I mean, I've already mentioned Lacey Phillips like 5 times in this episode, so everyone knows we're moving through her manifestation work. And during her deep imaginings, she always, and you know, when I feel inadequate or low self-worth, in the deep imaginings, she will ask you to like pinpoint the first time that you've ever experienced this emotion. And typically you're supposed to think of something more in the childhood or preteen years, but automatically, I think of getting rejected from colleges as the first time that I was faced with true deep rejection. And it was the moment that I first told myself, oh shit, you're not good enough. That's hilarious that you ever thought you could get into those colleges. Everyone is better than you. You don't deserve the best. And that is really when I internalized all of those thoughts that pop up in my daily life today. And I think the reason I, you know, don't talk about this as much and I feel it's unimportant sometimes is because I'm so fortunate and privileged that I got into NYU and then transferred to USC. So I went to schools that people dream of and would die to go to. So in fear of seeming ungrateful, I usually don't typically talk about this or acknowledge it, but it's something deeper than the schools I was accepted into. It was kind of my first experience with getting my hopes up, the possibility, and then that inevitable rejection that's deeply impacted and followed me to today. So do you want to comment on something? I have some more to say.
I feel as if you have more to say than I do as far as how the experience impacted you, so you can keep going and you just let me know when you want me to talk about my experience getting rejected from colleges.
Okay. So this is going to bring up a lot of shame and trauma for me, but I think it's really important to convey, so let's fucking go. Okay, we're going to bring it back. We're going to bring it back to like pre-high school. I was always a good and studious student leading up to high school, and my freshman and sophomore years in high school, I still excelled, but I didn't adopt this intensity about school until my junior and senior year, which is when I started dating someone in those years, and they really shifted my perspective and approach to school because He was very clever, one of the top students in our class, and I overworked myself, challenged myself to a degree that wasn't necessary. I took all AP classes my senior year, and I actually got my first anxiety attack before a calculus final, which you were there for, Scout. Do you remember that? It was at mom's house, like right before the final in the morning.
Huh. I don't recall that.
Okay, anyway, so that was the first time I've ever had an anxiety attack. And if I'm being honest, it was probably all to impress this boy. And the summer going into senior year, I was also going through a major internal dilemma because I decided to give up musical theater. And I don't know why this makes me cry every time, but that was a trauma. That was a loss that I've never mourned. And I'll explain a little bit more about why I gave it up. But, you know, I was in therapy when I first entered therapy. My therapist had asked me, like, you know, we're talking about childhood, and it took me months to even mention to her or even remember that I had this such, you know, formative part of my identity. And I've completely repressed it. And the reason I think that is because I began to feel a lot of shame around the choice to go to college for musical theater. You know, just for context, I was a professional performer in San Diego for most of my childhood, and it was all that I knew how to do, and I was really good at it. So there was no doubt in my mind that I would go to school for it or like be in a conservatory. And then I just like began to feel this intense shame because I was, you know, excelling at school, and I'd adopted this mentality that I should be going to school for something that's more like practical, and academic. And that was the first time I ever thought that way about theater. That going into senior year of high school. And it's the only time in my life where I think back and I was just so creative, and I didn't give a shit about what other people thought. I didn't care about what the world would think if I did this as a career path or as a job. And it wasn't until this moment in my life that all of that changed in about 1 month. I didn't consult with anyone about this decision. I just went up to mom and dad one day and I said, I'm gonna quit theater and I'm gonna go to school for something more practical. And I've never looked back. And I don't think I've ever, like, mourned that part of myself, because I think a lot of people, you know, have these passions in school and education and the world and society. They pressure us to give it up. Oh my God, why am I crying so much?
You're crying because you're realizing that you let someone else take something from you. But the thing that we should eventually talk about is that you can still take that back. Just because you gave it up 10 years ago in pursuit of trying to fit into a box doesn't mean that it's not still available to you. Your singing is, you know, you joke that you think I'm your biggest fan, but you're a highly talented singer, and it doesn't have to look like you can only sing if you're a full-time singer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so incredible to me because, you know, I thought this was what I wanted. And when I went to therapy and I was asked to kind of think back at that time, I was so shocked at myself that it took me so long to even tell my therapist that this was part of my life. I had completely repressed it and completely pushed it down because I was afraid of what other people would think of me. And I was afraid that it wouldn't bring me money, that I just all these things that we conjure up. And Anyways, so that was a huge part of that time in my life, I think, in addition to just, you know, trying to figure out what you were going to, how I was going to go to college or what have you. So I had literally applied to all of these colleges in the pursuit of musical theater. And then when I decided to drop it, we had to redo all of my applications. And I basically decided to apply to all of these Ivy League schools last minute, with basically no preparation. I had taken the ACT, but I didn't know that you have to take like the SAT2 tests and all these things. So I ended up scrambling for my first semester of senior year to complete all those things. And when I look back, it wasn't coming out of a place of intention. It was never something I so deeply wanted. It was something that people were telling me that I could have, right? Like my college counselor, this boyfriend at the time, and mom and dad, people were, you know, saying, you're so smart, you should go to these types of schools. And I thought that was like the, you know, symbol of excellence. So I wanted to achieve that. And I also only applied to East Coast schools because I wanted to get as far away from San Diego as possible, which was a huge mistake in hindsight. So when it came time to hear back from schools, I had got rejected from everywhere except NYU and Emerson. And I remember feeling this extreme shame. I took the day off of school and I remember going to hot yoga and just like literally crying all day. And I think that was the moment where I internalized that I would never get my hopes up again. And I should probably start playing it small so that I don't face this type of like trauma again. So in the end, I decided to go to NYU. I loved New York City, and I never really thought that I was like a typical college experience person and a campus person, but lo and behold, I got there. And I mean, this is for another podcast, but I've never felt more alone in my life. And it was also a very, very traumatic year for me. And so I decided to transfer. And this time I took my application process much more seriously and realistically. And I ended up getting into University of Michigan and Tufts and USC. And I chose USC to come back to California and be closer to my family. But again, once I got to USC, I kind of fell back into that mentality I had freshman and sophomore year of high school. So like I still cared about school, but I had chosen my major as business administration. And although, you know, I love business and both Scout and I are entrepreneurs, I chose it, you know, to be practical and to look smart. And I had no interest in finance and econ and no interest in going into consulting after graduation. And I was made to feel lesser than time and time again, because anything other than consulting and investment banking at the USC Marshall School of Business, shout out, was deemed like superfluous in business. So as a result, I got my first C ever. I know that's really annoying to say, but it is really difficult. I've never told anyone that. I got my first C in finance. And with that came this like, again, intense shame, because the education system labels our intellect with letters, and then it disgraces those that don't achieve the highest of excellence. And I had reaped the benefits from that system for so long, and then I hit a wall. And I'm so ashamed to say that I gave up instead of persevering and viewing that C as an opportunity for growth. And I was mortified with myself that I gave up hope. And if the education system is going to stay this way of like praising and shaming, they need to get better at lifting up those that don't do as well and really nurturing them, and even flipping the switch and like praising those that have failed and normalizing it, because that's what real life is: failure after failure, and you having to recognize that those are opportunities for growth in order to succeed. And the education system as it is set up right now does not create that kind of environment, and it it taught me that winning is all that matters, which I have, it has taken me about 5 years to unlearn that. So that's my spiel.
I just want to, you know, first applaud you for sharing that. I know that it was really hard and it's been weighing on you all day that you had to. So I think not only am I honored that you're sharing it with me, but I'm sure that everybody listening is really, really grateful that you felt safe enough here to go there. And it's also a really big testament to your growth and your self-awareness and your emotional awareness, as well as tapping into the way that you do want to live your life. Obviously, those things that you felt and exhibited during your college years, I would, you know, I don't know if the right word is assume, but I would confidently say that you don't want to use those tools to continue on. You want to kind of exhibit a different type of emotional, like showing up in a different way.
Yeah, for sure.
So thanks, Mads. It makes me sad, of course, because there's nothing more heartbreaking to me than a woman who turns her back on herself in pursuit of external validation. And I always try to show women that the path that lights them up the most is the path that you should walk down. And I think you're sitting here saying something that we should talk about is you're sitting here saying you gave up musical theater and thinking that because you gave it up at 17 means you gave it up for life. And that's not necessarily true. I think that we view our 20s as the most important decade of our life that sets up the rest of our life. But there's so much time, and pursuing your passions doesn't have to look like a career. But infusing musical theater into your life, I think, is so possible and so available to you if you ever feel as if you do want to tap back into that side of you. I've often thought to myself, I'm not really sure how she is okay without singing. I don't, you know, I'm a writer and I could never be okay if I didn't have that outlet available. It doesn't mean I write every day. It doesn't mean I write for a living, but I've tapped into that and always wondered how, you know, so I, if anything, I hope you sing tonight. That would be super awesome. You could send me a video. I keep them all when you do send them to me. So my college experience was very different. Even though I, too, got denied from every college possible. So as a student in high school, I was very aware from a very young age that the academic system was not for me. I knew that I had gifts and passions and interests that came alive, not within a GPA. And I knew I had a lot to offer, and I knew that there was an expression of myself that I could not express with a GPA. And I remember applying to colleges. Mads was allowed to apply out of state, but I was not. So let's just put that out there. So I applied to all the UCs.
I don't even think I asked. I just did things.
Yeah. I was only supposed to go to a public school. So I applied to all the public schools, UCs, state schools, etc. And I remember telling mom, I remember saying, I really hope they read my essay. And I hope that they actually think about who I am as a person. I was someone who did not get an A in grades or in subjects that I knew in my heart would not be beneficial for me in the long run. So, for example, I'm not a science person and I do not need AP physics to, or just regular physics, not even AP physics. I do not need physics to live my life today. There's no aspect of me that needs physics. I knew that as a 16-year-old, so I did the bare minimum. I knew that about statistics and math. I wasn't going into math. So I did the bare minimum. I always tried to get an 80% because I thought people would be a little bit happier with me if I got B's, but I did get a C in physics. 79.9 actually, guys. But I didn't really care. I really didn't. I would skip science and math classes and go sit at the Panikin and read a book and write poetry and cry about my depression, which showed up in high school. And so I very outwardly said, yeah, you can put a GPA on me, but that doesn't really describe me. I had a 3.7, which to some of you might sound really high.
I think that's high.
It might have been a 3.6. 3.6, 3.7. That was weighted. That was with my APs.
Okay.
So, which sounds great, but my friends were getting like 4.3s, right? So, I applied to colleges, and I really wanted to go to Berkeley because I liked the culture at Berkeley. I remember my mom asked me, what college do you want to go to? And I remember just looking at her and saying, I want to go to the college where I can dress like myself and people won't look at me weird. I didn't care what the name was. A lot of the times I was made fun of by my friends, who are still my friends today and love me dearly, but I was labeled as the emotional one and the poetic one. And instead of wanting to play beer pong, they'd be like, why don't you go write a poem?
Oh my God! Savage!
And so I knew that I was a little alternative, and I just wanted to go to a college where I could wear something that I wanted to wear and where I could wear anything and no one would think twice about it. So anyways, I didn't get into any college. I didn't even get into my safety schools. Like, it was weird. It was like I did not get into a college. I had to go to community college, guys. And my parents were so upset because they had paid for private school my whole life. And I didn't even get into a college. And
like, I'm so happy we can laugh about this now. Because, well, like,
but even
it's
in
just
that
crazy.
Moment, like, even in that moment, I didn't actually have shame. Like, I went to school the next day and said, oh, yeah, guys, I'm going to go to Berkeley Community College. Like, I didn't care because I knew that if that admissions counselor actually met me, they would want me at their school. So I knew that the way they were asked to present me was not an actual representation of who I was. So, of course, I wasn't feeling ashamed because they didn't actually reject me. They rejected a system that didn't even have anything to do with me. So, of course.
That's very self-aware of you to recognize at such a young age.
So we've talked about my college experience on this podcast. I've dropped out because of bipolar disorder. I went to 4 different colleges and then dropped out again. I never graduated. But I do have to say that I did go to Sarah Lawrence College for a little over a year, and it was the most magical experience because it matched exactly who I was. It matched my soul. It was the first time I entered an environment and said, oh, I can really be me. Like, I can really, really be me. And so I'll always treasure that experience. But other than going to Sarah Lawrence, I'm very, very vocal about the fact that I don't believe college prepares you for anything. Like, no offense, Mads, but I don't believe in business degrees. I don't think you learn anything about business from those degrees.
Honestly, I think so too. You go for, and I apologize to anyone who has been to business school. I mean, I was undergrad for me, but you go to college for the network, I believe. I mean, yes, you have a fun experience and you might gain some social skills, but like, and unless you're going to school for something very specific like medicine or law or, you know, what have you, I'm with you. To me, it was rote memorization to the point where, you know, I have a photographic memory, so I attribute a lot of my success in school to that. I was able to just memorize shit, regurgitate it onto a test, and have it exit my brain. Like, I was so skilled at that. And that is not real life. That's not a skill.
But also, you said something.
That's not knowledge.
You said something while we were on my Point of View podcast, and you said, I said that I like didn't show up in the places I didn't really feel the need to. And you said, yeah, it's because you would have had to work twice as hard, or like something about you being smart and me not being smart. And I know it was a joke, but that's how people view people. And in my opinion, there are, if you're listening to this and if I applied myself, I could have done it, but it was a waste of my fucking time and it had nothing to do with lighting my soul up and what I wanted to do. And it would have, I would have done it for other people, and I can't operate that way. But if you're listening to this and you don't think that you're smart because you didn't get into a college, or you didn't get a grade point average, or you didn't get this, being smart has so many different shades. There are so many ways to be smart. I believe since day one that I'm super fucking smart. Super. But I took that SAT and ACT 4 times and got the same fucking score every time. Okay. And it wasn't a good one. But I am very smart, guys. Okay. And now it just sounds like I'm trying to justify that. But I am saying, like, smart doesn't come in a grade or a GPA or an SAT score or even a stupid college admission. Smart comes from what you actually do with your life.
Yeah. And it took me a long time, again, to unlearn that. I think also something we had touched on is directly right after college, I was so lost because I had excelled in that structure, that very regimented kind of pass fail type of structure. It's like you do the homework, you get the grade, you're this, that. Like we literally do that our whole lives until after college. And then we're thrown into this world and you're like, wait, where are the grades? Wait, how do I know how to assess myself? Like, where are the metrics? And none of that exists
internally, all baby.
I know. All of it is defined on your own, which, again, I learned that this year, 5 years after college, I finally have understood that, like, all of those parameters and structures that were enforced upon us in education, you now have control to create those in your life right now, which is beyond, I mean, it's illuminating and it's empowering. It's fucking scary. It is. But I don't know. Something about that feels like a release to me. It's like, oh shit, yeah, I can do that now.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, I've had, it's crazy because I was about one heavy semester away from graduating, and I dropped out, like, without thinking twice. Like, I was like, I'm out. This isn't for me. And people ask me all the time, oh, are you going to go back? Like, just get your bachelor's. Like, it's just one semester. And it's why? So I can feel like I have a security. So I can tell you that I graduated. So that you can look at me differently because I took 4 more classes. Like, that's a societal facade. Nothing I've ever done in my life has needed a college degree. College degrees don't actually teach you anything about life. And this is, disclaimer, excluding if you're going to be a lawyer, a doctor, an accountant. Like, there's certain professions that you need an education of this sort. But my hope and dream and wish is that one day when I have a child and they are 15 or 16, that I empower them to make decisions based off what they want, the way they want to live, what's pulling at their heart, where their true purpose lies. And if they don't want to go to college, they don't have to, because I trust that when you live in a state of alignment and when you show up because you want something, you don't have to pass through hoops that you think are these stupid requirements. You can make something of yourself without someone else's credibility attached to you. And so I hope that my child, like, I'm thinking of you as a 17-year-old giving up musical theater because you don't think it's a practical vocation. And I'm not saying mom and dad failed you in any way. That's not what I'm saying here. But if my child ever does that, I failed. Mm-hmm. I will have failed them, because I don't ever want anybody to make that decision.
Yeah. And I think mom felt that way. She mourned it. She begged me to reconsider. She did not understand where it was coming from. She was distraught. And I wouldn't listen to anyone. I really did not consult anyone about this decision. And it is so sad to me to think back on that time. But all of this is to say, look, education and knowledge is very important. We're not saying that. No, we're saying I, that it
I,
comes.
I educate myself constantly. There's just right. other ways that you can get.
Other forms.
There's other ways that you can get a higher education that doesn't include hundreds of thousand dollars, years right. of your life, stressed out about a grade point average, trying to fit an ideal of all A's. There's no such thing in life as all A's. You are. It's an unrealistic expectation that's ingrained to you from the beginning. And that right. you can be valued as a human being for other things other than a grade and a number.
Yeah, that is what I want people to walk away from today. And to understand that just to start the process of unlearning a lot of this, that because I'm sure you, listener, dear listener, have experienced this and know exactly what the fuck we're talking about. So start the journey of unlearning that, because once you are free from, you know, those expectations of either society, family, friends, yourself, I mean, lifting that is just so freeing and healing, and you can finally, you know, step into your self-worth and understand who you are as a whole. I think that was a big part of it, is like, I lost complete touch with my authentic self, right? Like, my authentic self was being on stage and being performative and like working tirelessly. Like I probably worked the hardest I've ever worked when I was in musical theater, and it was a joy. It was like a literal joy and delight for me, and that is my true authentic self, and I completely neglected it for the past 10 years, which is a shame. And I find ways to tap back into it. I mean, even the podcast, I think, has been a way for me to exercise that performance nature of myself, and creative outlet, of course. So there are ways that it can, you know, reconfigure itself into your life, but it does a disservice for you to play small. It's a disservice for you to not live to your fullest potential and live in your full self-worth.
I can't tell you how long I've waited for you to say stuff like this, like, and to talk like this and to come home to yourself like this. It's just, it's amazing. I, as a bigger sister, I don't know how much you know of how much I've been watching from a distance and invested in your emotional growth, knowing that you can't push any person to get to certain places or come to certain realizations. No one could have pushed me to get where I'm at in you know, times when people just wanted me to get better, but I couldn't. So I totally understand how everyone has their own unique timing, but having been kind of a fly on the wall through all the phases of your life, it's a really big testament to see you talk about your past experiences the way you are right now. So you've given us a huge gift on this podcast today, and I know we appreciate it. I appreciate it. And sisters, if you want to peer pressure Mads into posting a video of her singing, please
post
an Instagram story, tag OK Sis Podcast. You can say it to the camera or just text Maddie, sing a fucking song on Instagram, and maybe we can get her to post an IGTV of her singing.
Okay. Well, the progress is not there yet, but we'll keep chipping away.
Yeah.
Sisters keep bothering her. What a roller coaster of emotion. What a roller coaster. Giving it to you raw and real, everyone.
Yeah, I was not going to have a glass of wine tonight, but maybe I will.
Oh, hundo P.
Hundo P.
Oh my god, I forgot about that term. I used to use that so much. That's so embarrassing. Oh yeah, no, the wine will be flowing.
Yeah,
for me.
I don't know. I think I might just go with tea.
Wow.
Sometimes when you have an emotional release, it's really nice to just sit with it.
This is true. Yeah. This is true.
So, anyways,
all right.
Thanks,
well,
Mads.
We love you, sisters. We love you, Scout. We love me, Maddie, and we love you, sisters.
We love everybody.
We love everyone.
We choose love today.
Okay. Well.
Okay. Right. You guys can follow us on Instagram at OK Sis Podcast. If you aren't already, join us at our secret Facebook group, OK Sisters. And if this episode hit home and you think a friend could really value from hearing Mads crying uncontrollably on the podcast, please text it to a friend.
Bye, sisters.
Love you.